Hi guys, welcome to the Hot Literati. The Hot Literati is a collective of hot, cool, well-read people. My name is Haley, but my friends call me Halo, and I'm so happy that you are here. So today I'm going to surprise continue talking about dating, but through the lens of like a couple other things that I've read lately. I finished this like little Dylan Thomas novel called like The Beach of Felisa or something like that, and I'm like 70 pages into My Mother, Myself, The Daughter's Search for Identity by Nancy Friday, and Valentine's Day just ended, so these are things that have just been like on my mind. And you know, I've talked a lot about dating and dissociation through a lot of different lenses. Like lately we've been talking about Anais Nin, and lately, like, reading this mother-daughter psychology book, which I think is, like, my final boss and, like, individuation, whatever, it's definitely given me, like, more food for thought and just reflections on, like, the way that I date, the ways that I've dated in the past, like, habits I want moving forward, things that I maybe want to get rid of, and, yeah, but what I want to start off with is, this idea that comes up in Bell Hooks's All About Love. She says pretty early in the book that women are conditioned by society to lie to men, in dating specifically. She says that we're taught to kind of shift, like, basically like pretend to be someone who we aren't, to pretend to be this like ideal version of woman in hopes that like a man will fall in love with us and like do whatever. And I think there's also this theme of like expecting an ideal, like an ideal partner to behave in like all the ways that we want to behave in. And I think this transcends romantic relationships, to be honest. Like, I can't remember what it was, but I was listening to something that said that we experience anger when someone behaves in a way that violates our expectations of them or our expectations of like how they should behave. And that concept blew my mind, because now whenever I feel like annoyance or impatience, I like ask myself if it's that, and a lot of the time it literally is. It's like the most it's the most like humbling way to kind of like reorient your framework, your frustration, your anger. But that being said, I think in romance, we do have the tendency to like present ideals to one another, and it's like really nice at first. I think it's like very natural, right? But then when you start to like resent that person because maybe they don't know like who you actually are, or you start to like get angry because the ideal person that you like fell for or that you think they are is like not who they actually are, like it's just not sustainable for a healthy like long-term monogamous relationship. And I think everyone who's been in a relationship will probably like experience this in some way and like understand what I meant. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like any examples. Like Valentine's Day just passed, so let's say like for Valentine's Day, like you want your partner to, I don't know, like cook you like a super nice like home cooked meal and get you flowers or something, and they don't, but you've like pretended up until this point, maybe pretended is a harsh word, you've like presented as being really like relaxed, like chill, like, you know, like a cool girl who like doesn't need things like that. And so then Valentine's Day comes up and I don't know, they like do something like correlative to that instead of this like grand gesture, because you didn't communicate that like gestures like that are important to you, and then you're probably feeling angry. But like your partner doesn't know who you are in that sense, and they're behaving for that. But maybe like vice versa, maybe if you would have communicated that, you'd find out that they're like incapable, they're like ethically against gestures or something, and then we would realize it's like incompatibility. Like I was having this conversation with someone the other day. I think we have the tendency in so many romantic situations and so many relational situations, because the Nancy Friday book talks about how we do this a lot of the time with like mother and like parents. We have the tendency to cast like one person as evil or one person as things being like their fault. But you know, like a relationship exists on two ends, and I think in situations like this especially, the word that I like to use that I've definitely used more, like reflecting on like my own breakup, is like compatibility. I think it's such a graceful word, and it accounts for like both perspectives, and I think it gives both people like fullness and the opportunity to kind of still feel like a full person and not feel like unnecessarily given reverence or like villainy, because both can be like dangerous relationally. I think like you want to exist as a full person, which is what I want to talk about in this episode, because I think the psychological guide to dating as a woman in contemporary society, I personally think, exists fully on the basis of like trying to find emotional and psychological fullness and trying to individuate. And I have gotten to this conclusion through just having like the most bizarre 2023 in terms of dating. Obviously I like wrote about it a lot online, and I don't like love writing about my dating life anymore, and I like don't really, because I want to focus more on my novel. But I think I learned like so much about myself through dating. And like one thing I've talked about a lot after reading Reflecting Men at Twice Their Natural Size by Sally Klein, and I think I talk about it in this post on the blog called Why You Should Never Fake an Orgasm and Should Always Let Your Boyfriend Cry. This idea of like projecting desire, like, and Nin I think gets at this too, like projecting desire, like do you want to be with them or do you just want to do what they do? So for example, I kept like dating musicians, and then it was like, oh, I just want to like do music, and that's why I joined a band, like I've said over and over. Or even like one of my writers was talking about this with like skater boys, like one of the writers on Hot Literati, you should read her work. Her name is Bella V, and her Substack is Nihilist Femcell Outpost. But yeah, she was saying like, is she attracted to skater boys or does she just want to skate? And that doesn't mean that like male musicians are evil. It doesn't mean that skater boys are evil. It just means that when we project like an idea onto someone instead of letting them exist as like a person in their own right, it's frustrating for everyone involved. And so that's what I mean with like psychological wholeness. I think one of the first things you can do is ask yourself, like, am I attracted to this person, or like am I projecting onto them? And if I'm projecting onto them, what am I projecting onto them? Why am I projecting it onto them? And these next few like ideas are still pretty freshly formed in my head, because I've done a lot of like revisiting my own ideas and notions from like my childhood and child psych in the past few years after reading Alice Miller's The Drama of the Gifted Child and Reviving Ophelia by Dr. Pfeiffer. But the My Mother Myself book and Reflecting Men both talked about like early adolescence in terms of gender, and how young girls so early are taught like not to get dirty, that they have to like clean up, that they are basically meant to be like caretaker and like reflector and not really like person themselves, like person with agency, person who's able to explore, who's able to have their own desires, who's able to make a mess. So early on you suppress this kind of like wholeness, and that you absorb this desire to always be like cleaning up or always be like pleasing, essentially. I think pleasing is like the best word for everything in that book. And I think this past year, like through my own dating explorations and like what I read and reflected on, I think I really confronted my own relationship with people pleasing. And I think people pleasing also gave me this like deep sense of like resentment, because I thought like, oh, like I'm trying to make everyone else happy, like da da da. But I learned there's like such a fundamental difference between kindness and niceness, and you can be like a kind person without being nice. And niceness a lot of the time has these like very fraught ties to like ego and needing to be perceived as a nice person by other people, which is inherently dissociative, instead of just like cultivating like good values, like good thoughts, things like that. So I think like it's very psychologically frustrating to be raised in a way that's like people pleasing oriented, but it, a lot of the time that's how like a lot of girls are raised. And then I'm only 70 or 80 pages into My Mother Myself, so bear with me, but it talks about how that idea is like so connected to like mother and like how much we really do internalize our mother's like notions around so many things, around like sexuality, around like our perception of ourself as like a full person, and how important like mother's approval almost is like really early on in your life, and how important like physical touch from mother is really early in your life, and kind of the ways you're stunted psychologically. You can be stunted psychologically if you don't get those things. And it was definitely like disorienting to read that, as someone who grew up like kind of mousier, I guess. But I think I really like this book so far because it isn't making like mother out to be evil. Like, I love this quote: "We are raised to believe that mother love is different from other kinds of love. It is not open to error or doubt or the ambivalence of ordinary affections. This is an illusion." So I think like there's also like this one quote that gutted me. It was like, "I wish she had had a chance to live another life, mine perhaps." So it gets at this tension between like mother-daughter of like, you know, when you, as you get older, you like become who your mother was, or but you're also like your own person, and it's this super like fraught tension. It's amazing. And I mean, out of love, a lot of the time, like, mothers, you know, like, critique their daughters. Like, they want them to present their best self to the world because the quote-unquote best, because a lot of that connects back to, like, people-pleasing and reflecting men. But historically, you know, it's been, like, I think Robert Greene, of all people, writes this. Historically, like, being desired has been a very, like, societally, like, safe way for women to have like social mobility, to acquire like safety through a partner in a society where they didn't have like financial agency or physical agency. So it kind of makes sense from this almost like weird sociological like ebb psych perspective. Yeah, this quote I thought was crazy. "Mother must be aware of flaws in us we do not suspect, and wish in which the stranger will detect in a moment. We blush at our stupidity in thinking we were so lovable." So I think she gets it, like, this tension of, like, criticism from mother. Like, we want mother to approve of us, but mother wants to be, like, as critical as possible so that we're presenting, like, the best version of ourselves to society. But then psychologically, that does all these, like, loops and things, and we end up having these insecurities starting really young because they were pointed out by the person who we came from, the person who we like felt like we were, maybe like still feel like we are in some ways. And she hasn't really like gotten into it in the book yet, so I might follow up on these things eventually. But she keeps connecting that to feelings of security and like romantic relationships, because if you're meant to feel like you have to like earn love in different ways young, then you like take that to your romantic relationships. And she emphasizes like the importance of separation of mother and daughter. Separation is not the end of love, it creates love, she says. Like, she uses this example, this might be a bit outdated because it's from the 80s, but she says, "Grown women collect match covers and menus from nights when a man held us close, when we felt most possessed, and we count the hours dead until he calls and brings us back to life." Which I think is still so relevant today, the way that, like, I mean, when I was with my ex, I had, like, a little box of, like, knickknacks and, like, tickets from things we went to, and photos and stuff, and, like, I don't think he had anything like that, which isn't a character reflection of him. Friday claims that it's this very, like, gendered, feminine, what she calls dependency on the past. And she says, "But men don't need our collections. Their future may be uncertain, but they feel they have a hand in its creation. They are not dependent on the past. And when I read this like on the elliptical, my jaw dropped because I had been listening to this Neville Goddard lecture on like imagination, and he was using the same lingo, like dependency on the past and creation. And I think that's like this weird psychological like consciousness loophole that happens because of the way we're societally conditioned according to gender. And I think it expands beyond gender. I think, you know, depending on who you are, like what you do with your time, like different people may feel this way, but I think when you're like constantly dissociating and thinking about what people are thinking about you, you are kind of like dependent on the past, because your brain, I don't love, sometimes I like the brain as a computer metaphor, sometimes I don't, right now I think I don't, but I mean, you know, your brain is thinking like, okay, when I wore this thing, this like man treated me this way, so tomorrow I'm going to wear this thing so he'll like be nice to me again, when in reality, like someone who's really self-possessed, like someone who's like fully present, probably isn't even like thinking about things like that. Like they're probably not even interpreting other people based on things as like arbitrary as that either. So I guess like the long-term goal is to not even think like, how do I elicit like the best sort of action or like care from other people? The goal in becoming like a full separated individual, or like a full, fully inhabited individual, separated from mother, I guess is like the idea, is to think like, what do I want to wear? How do I feel? Like the sun is shining. This is like, these are the things that I'm sensing. And it's this idea that you're not constantly trying to process in like an extremely dissociative way. So that's like very heady and very tangential. But I wanted to add one more quote onto this. I mean, Friday also gets into this like really fraught section on sexuality and how like motherhood like desexualizes women in society, but then how daughters kind of like interpret that and start to see sex as something like taboo or like dirty, and that they don't, I mean, I think this is, we've had like a big cultural conversation around this already, like then they don't have like agency psychologically in terms of like feeling morally free to explore like their own desires, their own interests. And I think we could have a really nuanced conversation about this, because even though culturally I think it's like so much more accepted now, obviously because of like the media that we see, like one show that just comes to mind is like Never Have I Ever, for some reason. I haven't seen all of the most recent season, but I saw like the first one, and yeah, it's this like show about a girl, you know, in high school, like of high school age, like exploring her desires, her interests and things. But again, it's like media, and that's one of my personal fascinations, is like what constant media consumption is doing to our society, the difference between like consuming media that lets you explore those types of experiences and like actually going out into the world and like having them in ways that are like safe, because I think they're just like very different psychological experiences, because one is like embodied, and one is sheerly like simulated. So that's not a question we're gonna answer right now. That's not a question I'm gonna answer at 1:30 a.m. But it's an interesting discussion that I think is worth having. But yeah, the only other quote I really wanted to talk about in the Friday piece was why the business between a mother and daughter is never finished. She says that about, actually, let me backtrack. Quote, raising a daughter to be an autonomous person with a sexual identity is a job for which few women are equipped, because they never succeeded in doing it in their own lives. It is why the business between a mother and daughter is never finished. Now there's a real woman, a man says, and every woman in earshot turns to glean what a quote-unquote real woman is. So I think she's, like, I'm excited to see for the rest of the book how she parses out this, like, definition of, like, womanhood and sexual identity and this, like, psychological dissociation. I'm curious if there are any parallels to reflecting men. But, like, I think this is one of those books that's definitely going to have a lot of implications for the way that I think of myself, the way that I date. I've already noticed, like, it is affecting the way that I date a little more. For example, like, I think in the past, I have been relatively, like, cold and detached, just by nature of, like, a fear of closeness, because of what I felt like in my early childhood was almost like a rejection. Whereas, like, now, like, my mom, for example, when I grew up, spent a lot of time doing, like, hobbies and, like, jobs and things, and she also spent, like, a good bit of time alone. And when I first started going to therapy and just, like, reflecting on, like, childhood and things, like, I would think about that. And I went to go see St. Omer, actually on a date last year, which is this, like, French film about Black motherhood, and it's basically, like, a court drama. And there was this one scene in the film where the protagonist has a flashback to her childhood, and her mom is, like, in the kitchen with her. Her mom, like, gets out food for her or something, and then the mom, like, goes into her room and shuts the door, and the girl is, like, out there. And when I tell you, this was, like, a first day, I started, like, crying. I don't even think he noticed, which is definitely indicative of how, like, the next few dates went. But, yeah, like, because that was, like, a memory for me. It's, like, my mom spending a lot of time alone, right? And after the film, I was thinking about, like, the legacy of, like, Black motherhood and how historically, like, I think you see this in New York a lot, like, a lot of, like, Black mothers were taking care of, like, white children, so then they didn't have time to, like, come home and take care of their own children. And even though I think culturally, like, yeah, we have, like, things that have been passed down, things like psychological things, all that, like, I don't think that's the case with my mom. I think my mom just, like, liked to be alone and was tired sometimes. And so even though it's something that I used to look back on with, like, a little bit of, like, sadness, now I'm actually so grateful, because I'm realizing, like, I had a mother who embodied, like, a pursuit of her own agency. She was always going to have, like, a hobby that fulfilled her, a job that gave her a sense of purpose. She was always going to, like, take time for herself and give herself time to, like, rest and be restored, so that when she was, like, in different environments, she could be present. And, like, was childhood perfect? No, but it literally wasn't perfect for anyone. And I love what Friday says about, like, motherhood and, like, maternal love. She says, like, mothers don't have to be amazing. Like, mothers don't have to be good. They just have to be good enough. And I think that having that perspective, and as I get older, just allowing my mom to be, like, a full person in my eyes, has given me so much more, like, empathy and compassion towards her and, like, respect towards her. So, yeah, that's why, like, that's something that I used to look on, like, dang. But now I'm actually, like, so grateful that that was modeled for me really young. And even though I think that I kind of, like, overcorrected, and I think that that's why I could be, like, kind of cold in the way that I date, now that I'm aware of that, like, I'm able to decide, like, whether or not that's the thing I want to, like, reconcile and, like, change. If I want to try to be, like, a little bit warmer, a little bit more, like, communicative, and it's, like, something that I can work on if I want to. But one thing that is really easy for me, just by nature of, like, my mom and how it was modeled, and having been in, like, a really long relationship so young, is, like, the pursuit of being my own person, independent of relationship, the pursuit of, like, fully inhabiting my own desires, my own interests, taking time alone, which I think is so important, especially if you do get into a relationship with someone. Like, you should still have your separate lives and things that you feel like are yours. So I think TLDR, I think the psychological guide for like dating as a woman, dating men now, is literally just like fully inhabiting yourself, inhabiting your own desires, interests, like senses, and having your own interests, your own life, and allowing someone else. It's funny because I was like talking to someone, I was like talking to this trainer, and I was like, do I want to pay for training? And I think the language that I used was like, it's a nice to have, but like, I don't really need it right now. And I think, and that's like because I like my workout routine, I like do weird stuff, like listen to little like philosophy things and like read while I work out and like listen to classical music. But I think that's a good metaphor. Yeah, like I'm so happy with my like my own little like workout routine that I don't really want like personal training right now. And I think that's a metaphor of like how you should think of dating. Like, you should cultivate your life, your hobbies, your like your mind, even like what you put into your mind, what you think about. You should cultivate that in a way to where you're just like content with that, and you don't need a partner to complete it. But a partner then becomes like a nice to have, but not a necessity. And when you're able to show up as a full person like that, I think it just makes the relationship of like dating and then eventually being in a relationship with someone like so much more fun, fulfilling. And is it going to be perfect? No, because we're humans, you know. And to have like a life like that, where something like a relationship is nice to have, like that's a constant process that I feel like you have to be in pursuit of. But pursuing it is like better than not, and it's the first step. And yeah, just have agency, create your own life, don't be dependent on the past, check in with yourself. And yeah, okay guys, I'm gonna go to bed now. Thanks for listening. Bye.